So this morning, we're going to move from Moses being visited by the angel of the Lord at the burning bush. We're going to continue that dialogue and that episode, and then we're going to move to Moses actually leaving and heading back to Egypt and arriving in Egypt. So that's where we're going to go this morning. Last week, we spent a lot of time on just three verses. So we really slowed down so that we could think about the name of God as he revealed it in Exodus chapter 3. He said, I am who I am. He said to Moses, tell them I am has sent you. And then he revealed his name, or re-revealed his name as Yahweh, the name that he would give to the Israelites there in Egypt. So we slowed down so we could make sure we paid plenty of attention to this particular name that God gave. And we talked about that last week. And if you notice that verse 16, where Ron started reading and is the beginning of our passage today, that's really just picking up where we left off last week. Right after God revealed his name, he said, this is my name forever, the name you shall call me from generation to generation. Then he goes on to say, this is what's going to happen when I send you, as you go back to Egypt, when you begin to meet with people. So we're going to see a couple different things this morning, all right? Here's our outline that I want you to be aware of. These are the things we're going to see from this part of chapter 3 all the way to the end. We're going to see God's plan of action. God is going to lay out, this is what's going to happen when you go back to Egypt, and this is how I'm going to be at work. In chapter 4, Moses has a couple of objections that he has, and God is going to answer those and solve those problems for him. And then at the end of chapter 4, we're actually going to see the trip back to Egypt as Moses begins traveling and actually arrives there at the very beginning. So that's where we're going this morning. And I want you to notice where Ron read. Verses 16 through 20 was what he read. We'll take all the way down to verse 22, the entire rest of chapter 3 this morning. So God says, here's the plan, Moses. I've given you my name. I'm sending you back. You are supposed to deliver the Israelites out of the hand of Pharaoh, the most powerful ruler on earth at that time. He says this to Moses, who is a shepherd working for somebody else, not a whole lot of financial means, nothing impressive about Moses at this point, just a random guy out in the wilderness almost. You go talk to the most powerful king in the world, and you give him some commands that I'm going to deliver him, and then here's what I'm going to do. So this is already shaping up to be a little bit strange, but we know that God said, I will be with you when I do this. And this is the important thing. It's not anything about Moses. It's not him and his power or his persuasive words, but that God is going to be with him. The I am, who exists eternally, who is eternally active, who is a covenant-keeping God and is working for his people. As we talked about last week, that's what I am means. That's what his name Yahweh means. So that this God will be with Moses, he says in verse 16, to assemble the elders of Israel. So this is the first thing Moses is going to do when he gets back to Egypt. He's going to assemble the elders of Israel, and he's going to meet with them. And here's what he's going to say. The Lord Yahweh, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, appeared to me and said, I have watched over you and seen what has been done to you in Egypt. Now this is going to be a huge relief to the Israelites there because they feel like they've been abandoned by God. And I promised to bring you out of your misery in Egypt into the land of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. Now, those are all the people that are inhabiting the land, which is going to be known as the Promised Land. So I know that it's confusing, and so they're hard words to say and everything, and Perizzites does sound a little bit like parasites, doesn't it? So, yeah. Not a whole lot that you need to worry about right now. We'll get into a few of these different nations as we move through the book of Exodus. But the main thing that you need to know there is that all these groups of people are living currently in the land that Israel is going to move into, a land flowing with milk and honey. I've often told people that if they were writing the Bible today, in addition to milk and honey, they would probably add Qdoba queso to that list. Milk, honey, and Qdoba queso, because that stuff is good. Have y'all eaten at Qdoba? So I ask people this sometimes, and they say, Qdoba, what is that? There's one on Greenbrier. There's one on Military Highway. There's one over. This is some good stuff, guys. And they have this cheese sauce. It's melted cheese, and it is incredible. It is probably better than milk and honey. This would be at the top of the list in the Promised Land. But this is the Promised Land, okay? It's a good place. It's abundantly blessed by God is the idea there. all right? The elders of Israel will listen to you. So this is good news, because Moses doesn't have a lot of credibility at this point, other than he's going back, he's saying that God sent me and this is his name. But God says, here's my plan. The elders are going to listen to you, and then you and the elders are going to go to the king of Egypt and say to him, Yahweh, the God of the Hebrews, has met with us. Let us take a 3-day journey into the wilderness and offer sacrifices to the Lord our God. But I know that the king of Egypt will not let you go unless a mighty hand compels him. Now, why not? Why would that be such a big deal to let them go for 3 days, to take a long weekend, and go out and worship and then come back? Well, Bible scholars think that there's a lot more to it than that, that saying a quote-unquote 3-day journey is just a normal way of saying a long journey with official consequences, is the way one scholar put it. In other words, he's asking very nicely for them to leave permanently when he says a 3-day journey. A comparison would be when Nineveh in the book of Jonah is said to be a 3-day journey. A 3-day walk. Some people say, well, maybe it took 3 days to walk across the city if you looked at all the sites, or maybe it took 3 days to travel to Nineveh, depending on where you started. But that does seem to make a lot of sense, particularly in Jonah, and I think it does here as well, that Moses is going to be requesting official leave, that we are going to get out of here, and Pharaoh is not going to let them go. Because it doesn't seem like Pharaoh would be so dead set against them just going out for 3 days and returning. And you also see what they're going to do when they get out for these 3 days. It says that so that we can offer sacrifices to Yahweh our God. Now, it could be that they were just going out for a religious festival if they were just going out for 3 days and coming back. But this is a statement that we are no longer adhering, we're no longer following, we're no longer submitting to the gods of your nation. Our God is calling us back to himself, and we are going out, maybe, very likely, permanently, to go and worship him the way that he is commanded, and we are no longer under your authority. So this is actually, and in Near Eastern cultures, it was very common to be very humble and deferential in your requests. So that's one of the reasons that this seems like it may be a plausible option about what's going on here, is that Moses is being very understated in what he's requesting as an official diplomat in a lot of ways. So he's saying, we're going to go out, and Pharaoh is not going to let them go. The king of Egypt will not let you go unless a mighty hand compels him. And this is exactly what's going to happen if you know the story of Exodus a little bit. So, verse 20, I will stretch out my hand and strike the Egyptians with all the wonders that I will perform among them. After that, he will let you go. So this is a game plan. God says, look, you're going to go, you're going to meet with the elders, they're going to receive you, you're going to meet with Pharaoh, he's going to reject you, but then I'm going to perform some mighty wonders, then he's going to let you go. This is a pretty detailed plan that God is offering here. And verse 21, here's some more details for you. And I will make the Egyptians favorably disposed toward this people, so that when you leave, you will not go empty-handed. Every woman is to ask her neighbor and any woman living in her house for articles of silver and gold for clothing, and you will which you will put on your sons and daughters, and so you will plunder the Egyptians. That word plunder is a key word there because it's a word that's normally associated with war. Now, the Israelites are not going to go to war with the Egyptians here, but God is. And that's where this plunder language comes in. In fact, in Exodus chapter 15, the title of our series is The Lord is a Warrior. When Moses sings his song about what God has done in delivering the Israelites, when they finally have exited Egypt, his statement is going to be, the Lord is a warrior. The Lord has fought this battle. He has won this battle. He has conquered the Egyptians. And the plunder of that battle, the Israelites are going to receive. They're going to receive silver and gold and all kinds of wealth from the nation of Egypt, which is going to serve them well in their wilderness wanderings over the next generation. So God is prophesying, he's predicting these details about how the scenario is going to unfold. And if you, like I said, if you know the story of Exodus, this is actually what happens. God is right when he predicts, which that's not a real surprise to us, right? Because we know the God that's revealed to us in the Bible. He's the God who knows the end from the beginning, and not only that, but he is sovereign and he has control over human history and the kings of the earth even. I'll show you a couple verses that teach this. I want to show you this and make sure you understand how clear this is in the scriptures. Isaiah 46, 9 through 11. This is where this passage is coming from. God says, I am God, and there is no other. I am God, and there is none like me. So the exclusivity, the exclusive power and sovereignty of God is what's in view here in this passage. I make known the end from the beginning, which is exactly what God is doing here, right? He says, this is what's going to happen, Moses. This is how it's going to happen, and you're going to leave, and you're going to take plunder. That's the end. I'm telling you that before we even get started with all this. I make known the end from the beginning, from ancient times, what is still to come. I say, my purpose will stand. That's why God can predict like this, because he has the kind of power to make this effective. He has the power to carry out his purpose and his plan in human history. Doesn't matter how Pharaoh decides, I'm not going to let God accomplish his plan. Pharaoh can't stand up to God. The magicians of Egypt can't stand up to God. He says, my purpose will stand and I will do all that I please. From the east, I summon a bird of prey. From a far off land, a man to fulfill my purpose. What is that? That's just a picture of how God can order the details of human history to accomplish his stated purposes before they happen. Whether it's a bird of prey, you know, how important is that? A bird of prey. That's just small detail, it seems like to us in life. But God says, if that's what it takes to fulfill my purpose, that's what I can do. From a far off land, a man to fulfill my purpose. What I have said, that I will bring about. What I have planned, that I will do. There's an incredible amount of confidence there. And confidence that's rightly placed is what you need to know. I underlined a few of these just to remind you of them. I make known the end from the beginning. My purpose will stand. I will do all that I please. That I will bring about. What I have planned, that I will do. This is the God who's speaking to Moses here. And he has the freedom and the power, the plan, to lay out his plan ahead of time. Pretty impressive that he's doing this. Let me give you another passage from Daniel chapter 4. All the peoples of the earth are regarded as nothing. I mean, we're impressed by Pharaoh, by the Egyptian empire in the world of this day. That Pharaoh is the most powerful earthly ruler, but God's not impressed. All the peoples of the earth are regarded as nothing. He does as he pleases with the powers of heaven. So the power is even greater than mankind and the peoples of the earth. No one can hold back his hand or say to him, what have you done? No one can hold back his hand. He does as he pleases. This is the God that's sending Moses. This is the God who is powerful enough to deliver his people. This is the God who, it doesn't matter if Moses is impressive, can speak well, is just a shepherd out in the middle of the wilderness looking at a burning bush. It doesn't matter any of that because he is I am, and no one can hold back his hand. He does as he pleases. So this is God's plan of action, and he is going to bring it to pass. So this wraps up the objection that Moses gave a little bit earlier on in chapter 3. Verse 13, Moses said to God, suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me, and they ask me, what is his name? Then what shall I tell them? Then God gave his name, and he also, along with his name, gave the plan that he had, which I think is aided greatly because he is, I am who I am. I will be who I will be. I can accomplish their sovereignty and freedom. That is one of the implications of the name of God as he's revealed it. So, you have a number of objections that Moses has given. And actually, I'll show you the objections as we go here. First of all, when God said, Moses, I want you to go to Egypt and deliver my people. Moses said, who am I? Verse 11, chapter 3, verse 11. I'm sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. But Moses said, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? The next thing Moses said is, what's your name? What name should I give them when I go to them? And that's the one we just wrapped up now. God has just finished giving his answer to question number 2. Now his next objection comes at the beginning of chapter 4. He says, basically, they're not going to believe me. So look down at chapter 4 with me. Moses answered, what if they do not believe me or listen to me and say, the Lord did not appear to you, Yahweh did not appear to you? Then the Lord said to him, what is that in your hand? What is that in your hand is his reply here. So Moses is concerned that they're not going to believe him, that they're just going to throw him out the door on his rear end and say, go back to Midian where you came from. We're not listening to you. So God is going to give Moses some signs to perform to demonstrate that he is a representative from God for the Israelite people. So they won't believe me. Here's what God says. So the Lord said to him, what is that in your hand? A staff, he replied. Now, this staff is going to become really important throughout the book of Exodus. It was already important to Moses. A staff was a very personal object back in this time of human history. Often, it wasn't just like they walked outside and happened to find a stick that had fallen out of a tree that day and they walked around with it. A staff was actually a personal item that you would carry with you and you would keep with you. It was very often decorated. It was carved with your name or some other things. It was could be very ornamented. It was a very impressive thing to have, this staff. So Moses would have had his staff with him. Being a shepherd, it was used for self-defense, for possible wild animals that were out there, but not only for self-defense, but for defending the flock. It was also used to keep the flock in line. When they weren't going the direction they were supposed to go, you could kind of knock the sheep upside the head and direct them back the other way. So a lot of practical value in the staff, as well as a very personal object for people at this time in history. So Moses says to him, what's that in your hand? A staff, he replied. And the Lord said, throw it on the ground. And Moses threw it on the ground and it became a snake and he ran from it. That's pretty cool, huh? So it becomes a snake. Now back in this time of human history, we don't know what their view of snakes were, although we know that they knew some of them were poisonous. We don't know if they may have thought all snakes were poisonous. We don't know if they knew the difference. Maybe some are and some are not. But anyway, Moses was worried enough that he ran from it. So he runs away from it. He is backing up at least enough so he can tell what kind of snake it is. Is this thing poisonous? Is it going to bite me? Moses threw it on the ground and it became a snake and he ran from it. Verse 4, then the Lord said to him, reach out your hand and take it by the tail. So Moses reached out and took hold of the snake, and it turned back into a staff in his hand. This, said the Lord, is so that they may believe that the Lord, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has appeared to you. So God says, I'm going to give you this miraculous sign, and he's going to give him a couple more here in just a minute. And this is what you're going to show to the Israelites to prove to them that I really am sending you, that you're coming by my authority and by my power. Now, snakes were really, like I said, they may not have known if all snakes were poisonous, but they were very afraid of snakes. Snakes were a very powerful animal, something like that could very easily kill you by biting you. You can imagine that people are going to stay a long way away from. I mean, even today, even though we have books where you can look at and see what kind of snake it is, and even though we can go to the hospital and get antivenom for most snake bites if we're bitten by a poisonous snake, most of us still don't like to get real close to snakes, right? This is a very vivid thing for God to display that he has power over something as vivid as a snake, that he can command it to appear, and that he can command it to disappear. So a very vivid sign for people back at this time in history. But that's not the only sign that Moses is going to perform. If you look in verse 6, then the Lord said, put your hand inside your cloak. So Moses put his hand inside his cloak, and when he took it out, the skin was leprous. That's some kind of skin disease. There are various different kinds of skin disease that all fall under the biblical category of leprosy. They didn't have all the modern medicine that we do to differentiate the different kinds of skin diseases that there were. So this is a type of skin disease. His hand became as white as snow, it says. So it was disease. This was a feared disease. There was no cure from it apart from God doing a supernatural act, as you see in the Gospels. Very often Jesus heals leprosy on a number of occasions. So this is got to be somewhat disconcerting to pull his hand out and suddenly he's got this terrible disease. But God says in verse 7, now put it back into your cloak, he said. So Moses put his hand back into his cloak. When he took it out, it was restored like the rest of his flesh. So God does this amazing, powerful work, showing his power over snakes and wild animals, over disease, which that's something that was also very feared in the ancient world. Verse 8, here's the third sign that God's going to give Moses. Then the Lord said, if they do not believe you or pay attention to the first sign, they may believe the second. But if they do not believe these two signs or listen to you, take some water from the Nile and pour it on the dry ground. The water you take from the river will become blood on the ground. Now, Moses isn't at the Nile River, so he can't do this one live and in person while God's telling them about it. But this is very similar to the first plague that God is going to inflict on the nation of Egypt. Now, we've had snakes, which are very feared. We've had disease, which was very feared. What about the Nile? Why would God choose this as a sign? Well, because the Nile, we talked about a number of weeks ago that the Egyptians viewed the Nile River as being at least under the power, if not one of the gods himself. They believed in many different gods, and the river was one of those, and one of the most powerful and important, because the Nile River brought life to the whole region of Egypt. Almost everyone who lived in Egypt lived in the area of the Nile River and its banks, because that's where the water was. That's where you could live in Egypt. So the Nile River is hugely important to the entire nation of Egypt in bringing life. And God says, take the water of this quote-unquote God of this nation and show that I have power over it to take what is life-giving to them and turn it into death. Basically, a river made of blood is not going to do any good to the nation of Egypt. It's going to mean death for their crops and for them eventually. And God says, the God of this Nile, I have greater power than him, as I'm going to turn his water into blood. So demonstrate that sign among the Israelites and among the Egyptians to show that I have, that you have my authority and power. So this is God's answer to what if they don't believe me. God says, well, I'm going to perform miraculous signs so that it is indisputable, Moses, that you are my representative, you're coming under my authority, and that you are here delivering my message. So that's God's answer to number three, they won't believe me. Here's number four, I can't speak well enough. This is what's coming up now. Let's look down at verse 10. Moses said to the Lord, pardon your servant, Lord. He's being very polite with all these. Pardon your servant, Lord. I have never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue. Now, like I said, Moses is continuing to be polite. And in some ways, this appears to be a ceremonial, ritual kind of back and forth when God would call someone and they would... The Israelites in their culture, they would have expected people to be overly humble and say, no, 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 not me, God. No, I can't do it. Please, no, somebody else. So there's that going on. But you also have the fact that Moses is not a poor speaker. That's what he says right here, but that's not absolutely not true. In fact, the book of Deuteronomy is Moses' sermon to the Israelites before he leaves them, before he's off the scene, before he dies. Moses preaches to the Israelites. He is a writer, a speaker, a communicator. He is not this poor public speaker that he's advocating that he is right here. He says, I'm slow of speech and tongue, but that's really not true on one hand. And another thing, he's just being overly humble, it seems like. And here's God's answer to him in verse 11. The Lord said to him, who gave human beings their mouths? Who makes them deaf or mute? Who gives them sight or makes them blind? Is it not I, Yahweh? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go, I will help you speak and I will teach you what to say. So this is God. He says, it doesn't matter your speaking abilities, Moses. I'm the one that's going to give you the words to say. You go in my power, in confidence in me, not in confidence in yourself. You go and do this, what I'm calling you to. Then Moses has one more objection. Now, the way these work, if you look down 1 through 5, they're going to get more and more pointed and more serious as we go down the list. Although Moses is very cordial in all of these, even the last one where he says, please, please get somebody else to do it. Moses is still very deferential in the way that he's asking. But this, it's almost like at first Moses is like, okay, maybe I can do this. And then when he starts to think about some of the details, well, what name am I going to give them? And what if they don't listen to me? And then what if my own speech and I'm not convincing enough? What about all these different things? And almost by the end of it, he's convinced himself, I'm probably the wrong person to send here. Even though, like I said, he's being cordial, and it's in some ways, it indicates just an overarching humility. But by verse 13, at least, Moses has convinced himself that I don't need to be the one to do this. Pardon your servant, Lord, verse 13. Please send someone else. pardon your servant, Lord, please send someone else. I'm out of excuses. I can't think of anything else. I just don't want to do this. We can think of a lot of excuses, can't we? When God calls us to do something, when he commands us, and we know it, we know what we're supposed to do, and man, we can think of 500 excuses. Moses thought of 4 or 5 excuses. And we can think of a whole lot. This and Jonah seem to be the only times in the Bible when God calls a prophet or a servant to do a job and they just seem adamantly opposed to doing it. I mean, they just refuse to do it. Lord, please send someone else. Now, of course, Moses doesn't take the steps that Jonah does of running off to another country, the opposite direction of where God told him to go. But it seems to be a little bit unusual. Even if sometimes some people may have doubts, and for instance, Jesus in the garden prays, if this cup may pass from me, if there's any other way that this could happen other than me being crucified, please allow it. But nevertheless, not what I will, but what you will. And that always needs to be our answer. When God calls us to do things that are scary to us, that we don't understand exactly how it's going to work, you know, and we've been talking over the past 2 years. It's not quite 2 years, but not too far from 2 years that I've been here. We've been talking about a lot of different missions opportunities, and we've been giving to missions. Our Lottie Moon Christmas offering has just exploded, and the ways that we're supporting international missions in that way and in other ways with our mission partners as well. So I'm thrilled about that. We've been doing some great work in those. Annie Armstrong as well. But I know that God has called us as believers not just to give money so that other people can go and do missions, but to do missions ourselves, to be involved. Maybe not every single individual Christian going overseas to nations that have never heard the gospel, but at least involved on a local church level. I don't think God meant for all the churches to just send their money to another organization and let them take care of it, to outsource missions. But then we start to think about it. Well, how are we going to go? I mean, what do we know? How can we go to another country where we don't know the language, we don't know the culture, we don't even know how to book a hotel in somewhere in Asia or Eastern Europe? What are we going to do? What can we do? And we start to reason like Moses did. Well, they won't believe me. How effective can I be in actually going and doing something like that? Or I can't speak well enough. God, please send somebody else. Let the missionaries of our international mission board, let them take the gospel to the nations. We'll support them as much as we can. And what I want to encourage you today is when you're faced with things like that, not to be satisfied with passing it off and say, God, send someone else. Let's go. Let's do it. Let's do what God has called us to do, even if it seems like on a very practical level that we might fail. Why not trust in God and his power and allow his Holy Spirit to work? When God says, you know, there are people out at the ocean front that need to hear the gospel. And we've got a few of our folks that love going out and doing personal evangelism, like yesterday, trying to get a group together. And a lot of people were out of town. The group ended up not going yesterday because, like I said, a lot of people were out of town. They just didn't have enough people that were willing to go. But they said, you know what? We're going to be doing it next week. And we'll probably send out an email this week that says, evangelism team going to Oceanfront to do some evangelism. And some of you will read that email and you'll say, I can't speak well enough. Well, please send somebody else, God. I mean, I hope that you're excited that we have groups of people that go out and do evangelism. And it's not an easy thing to do. It's not, I guarantee you there's nobody on our evangelism team that doesn't get nervous going out there. But God says, I am that I am. He says, tell them I am has sent you. Be a broken, fallible messenger and trust in the power of God that he can do these kinds of things. When he calls you to forgive and you say, God, I can't forgive. Trust in his power. Trust in his command that he is commanding you to do the right thing, that he's guiding you down the right paths of life. And
regardless of what you're facing, regardless of what obstacles you think are there, believe and trust in him and obey. Allow him to come through and to deliver. This is the God who no one can hold back his hand. Why do you think that your frailty or your lack of knowing how to speak well enough or whatever your excuse happens to be, why do we think that that can stop what he's doing? May God call us to be more audacious, more willing to sacrifice and to be bold and to put our own respectability out on the line to allow him to come through and deliver. Pardon your servant, Lord, please send someone else. Just maybe you and I could get to a point where that would never be a prayer that we would pray. Lord, please send someone else. Maybe there might be a time, you know, I mean, if you're broke both your ankles and can't walk and you need to go deliver food to somebody, you say, Lord, please send somebody else. Okay, we'll let it go then. You know, I mean, there can be literal physical obstacles. There can be reasons why, practical reasons why you can't do certain jobs. I'm not saying you have to do everything every time somebody asks. But when you know God is calling, and when you feel the Holy Spirit saying, you know, this is something you ought to give it a try. You ought to go and see what I can do. Maybe we could even make a commitment this morning that our answer would not be, Lord, please someone else. Please send someone else. Pardon your servant, Lord. I'll be polite as possible, but can you get somebody else to do it for me? I'm scared. Maybe we could go even though we're scared. Maybe knees shaking, voice trembling. We walk up to people we've never met before and say, you know what? I want to deliver a message to you about the love of God in your life that was displayed in the cross of Jesus Christ. I'm going to wrap up today and just leave it at that. We'll finish up chapter 4 next week. Let's give God free rein in our lives. Let's be open to him and what he's going to do. Can I challenge you with that this morning? Don't send someone else. Say, here I am, Lord, send me. Let's pray. Father, I know we've got a room full of people who are willing servants. God, what an incredible church to be a part of. And God, I pray that you would let nothing hold us back from the potential that you have for reaching the nations and for reaching our community. God, please forgive me for ways that I've let fear hold me back, trusting in my own power and wisdom and plans, and not freely letting go to what you have called us to do. And God, I feel like there are probably other people in the room that would say the same thing, that are asking for your forgiveness in that same way, for times that we've said, God, please send someone else to do it, when all the time we knew you were asking us, you were calling us to go. So God, give us boldness. Give us a freedom to serve you and to live this life with abandonment, caring very little about our own reputation, but willing to give everything for the name and the power of Jesus Christ to be made known and be made great in this world. So God, I pray that you would place on our church a call to the nations. I pray that you would get us involved in a way that is honoring to you, that is effective for the spread of the gospel, in taking the gospel not only through our mission partners, but also through our own church members. God, I pray that you would give us great times of effective evangelism in this community as we are able. Great times of service, great times of representing you to the people that live in these neighborhoods and in the city around us. God, you have called us to a great task, one that we are not up to, but we know that you are, because you tell the end from the beginning and no one can hold back your hand. So God, we place our trust in you. May you show up. May you display your power and your great glory in just a few humble servants who are willing to go and do whatever you call us to. We ask it today in Jesus' name. Amen.